Welcome to the Butts and Seats podcast, Christmas episode, but it's just a normal episode.
Yeah, this does not feel holly and jolly at all.
Well, I'm your host, Saint Nick, alongside Elfily.
No. No.
Emily, you're not feeling very festive today?
Not really. No, especially not with this episode. Doesn't really give me festive vibes.
Well, technically, Santa is on this show.
Spoilers.
Which, I guess they wanted to do the angle, but I'm like, wait, why is Santa on the 12th and not the closest episode to Christmas?
Well, because this is the go-home for Stargate.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, pull out all the stops or something?
Yeah, today we're here to talk about December 12th, 2000, WWE Monday Nitro, which I believe was filmed the night before. Because if you recall, this episode takes place on a Tuesday.
Right. And they didn't tell anybody.
Yep. So my hunch is that it was filmed the day before, because I don't think they would have rebooked this whole thing.
Yeah, that was kind of what I was wondering last time when you said that this was on Tuesday and nobody knew. Like, people would have had to buy tickets for a Tuesday show.
Yeah.
And, like, the arena would have had to have, like, booked out that they were having a Tuesday show. Like, it should have been known in some circles. So I guess filming it on a Monday makes more sense.
Yeah, which, relatedly, I think I have an explanation to why the Thunders have been so short lately. Or I have half an explanation.
Okay.
So apparently, for whatever reason, they are using the live version of the show, not the broadcast version of the show.
What does that mean?
So anything that was pre-taped doesn't make it in. They literally only have the stuff they filmed live and in that order.
Oh.
Now, why they have that, I don't know.
That's very strange. That's such a, like, specific file to have.
Which means some of the backstage stuff is then shot live. So,
yeah.
I don't, yeah, it's weird.
That is weird.
But today's Tuesday Nitro was in, oh god, it's like Bossier,
I think it's Bossier County.
Louisiana.
It's Shreveport. It's in Shreveport, Louisiana. It's like on the outskirts of Shreveport.
It's down on DeBayou.
No, it's not on DeBayou. It's in Shreveport.
And I totally don't have a head-to-head rating, but I do have a Raw rating and then a potential Nitro rating.
Okay.
Raw normally does a 5. It did a 5.78.
Good episode.
So that kind of shows you that there isn't that much crossover between the two shows anymore.
No. No, it's not like you're switching back and forth.
And then Nitro potentially did a 1.7. Ugh. Yeah, I mean, it wasn't advertised to be on that day, so I was actually ready for lower.
Fair, yeah. So yeah, that is not as low as it could have been. So maybe they did do a little bit of a marketing push, like in commercials or something.
But let's go right into our backstage notes. Brad Siegel of Turner Company held a meeting with all the WWE executives and actually finally said, hey, the company's for sale.
Oh.
It's been actually for sale for a while, but this is the first time they actually said anything.
Like, it's been for sale since, like, September, October.
Yeah, it's been a while. If they don't sell, they're probably going to do the model that TNA does, where it's like, all right, we're going to just do, like, the weekly pay-per-view kind of thing, so.
That makes sense. But obviously it doesn't matter. Don't get there.
Terry Taylor, Johnny Ace, Craig Leathers, who was the head of production.
Craig Leathers, what a name.
Yeah, apparently he's the head of production. And Tony Schiavone all want to run the company.
Tony Schiavone? Can you imagine?
He's like a big producer on this show, so it's not that crazy a thought.
Oh. Well, what kind of like level of production does he have in AEW right now? Is he just a commentator or does he own any stake?
I don't think he has any stake. I think that he's just an employee. As noted, no one knew this show was getting bumped until Thursday, so they could not advertise on any of their shows. Terry Taylor may have been told a month ago, but no one followed up on any of that. Apparently, there's going to be two Phantom Nitros.
What does that mean?
So there's no Christmas Nitro and there's no New Year's Nitro.
Yeah.
Because both take place on a Monday this year.
Okay.
So this is like hard to find info on, but effectively, they're doing shows for like the other other countries. It's not going to air in the U.S., nobody wants to work them because it's a smaller
Christmas.
Payday. Yeah, it's Christmas. So this is a strange one. I've not heard or seen anything about these shows.
And
so.
This is such like an archaic idea now, too, because if Raw was on the same day as Christmas, like, I guess they were. I don't know. I wonder what they do for the Christmas shows. Like, I know current day WWE will, like, pre-tape some shows and have something air on a holiday.
Yeah, which then gets reframed into breaking news, a scheduling change has occurred in WWE. It's like,
calm down.
Yeah, pre-taping a show.
But yeah, this would not happen current day. They would not have a show.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a weird one. I glanced a little bit at those two Nitros and it's just, all right, it's the best of the past year. And I'm like, what did you find that is good from the last year?
Yeah.
Mark Madden has been suspended, and this one's weird because he's not here tonight, but he's on Starrcade and the next Nitro, and then he's gone.
He was suspended, though?
Yeah.
What did he do?
He just got beat with people, and I know there's like an incident with DDP.
Oh.
We'll talk about that more probably on the next Nitro, because it'll be his last one. So.
Okay. Wow, we're so close.
Bam Bam Bigelow apparently hyperextended his knee in a backstage segment, so I'm not the most hype for their Starrcade match.
Which is a shame, because like we got a little backstage promo about that match, and it finally gave some context, and I've been missing that context. I've not understood why that beef has been happening, so yeah. I needed that, and now I'm kind of sad.
And then this is mostly happening on the house shows, but DDP and Scott Steiner are refusing to work together over the Kimberly incident a few months ago.
So remind me what the Kimberly incident was?
Steiner called her a cunt to her face, and she went home and has not been back at work since.
Yeah, valid. All right. That tracks.
Yeah, that's going to get worse in the upcoming weeks, too.
Oh, no. DDP's right for that, though.
Yeah.
Don't talk to that man.
Yeah, to tease an upcoming backstage note, Scott Steiner is going to try to extract DDP's eye.
Oh, my.
Yeah. So, that's fun.
I'm getting flashes of Rollins, Rey Mysterio. Yeah.
Let's go into the weather report, where there's always thunder. As mentioned before, a bunch of stuff is cut, but I'm able to read recaps of other people's stuff to be okay. Like, all right, what am I missing? Ric Flair wants to strip Scott Steiner of the title for attacking Arn Anderson last week. But Arn shows up on the Titantron and is like, no, don't do it. And they cut the promo like, you know, he should lose it like the right way kind of thing. And
okay.
I don't know why he couldn't just come out and do this and they had him do it backstage.
So was it live backstage? I guess it must have been because you were able to see it.
Yeah, it was live backstage because Rick's in the ring, Jeff Jarrett's on the stage, and then Arn is backstage.
On camera.
Keep in mind, this was filmed 5 minutes after that attack would have happened because Thunder's taped after Nitro.
Weird.
Chronic has another job tonight. Crowbar has 60s gear for Daphne with crazy long extensions.
Yeah, it doesn't look like Daphne.
Crowbar hops on commentary on Thunder and does his Gordon Sully impression.
I love it.
We'll get more of that tonight.
I love it.
Buff complains about having to job and use that word. I'm like, fuck me. We're back to Russo shit.
We are.
In a famous segment, Kevin Nash and DDP did a pre-taped interview with Stevie Ray that they left in basically with them talking about Scott Hall. If you recall,
you can't say Scott Hall.
Yes. So anytime they said Scott Hall or Scott or Hall, they just cut the audio out. They don't bleep it. It literally just drops out.
That's really dumb. Why did we leave this in?
Yeah. So like, when me and were tagging earlier this year.
What?
And there's also like deliberate lighting issues that apparently they were going to edit in Scott Hall fucking with like the equipment. And they went, no.
Can't do that.
So, yeah. The only thing of note they actually say besides Scott Hall is DDP talks about how he's been doing yoga.
Hey. Wonder if that would become a big thing for him.
Reno saves Vito from a chronic beatdown. And in our main event, Goldberg beats Shane Douglas. And they claim he's 29-0. I've admittedly stopped tracking it.
Wow.
But during the match, Lex Luger brings Sarge out to the stage in the torture rack.
Oh, cool.
You excited for Goldberg versus Luger?
No,
that they brought in this man we don't care about.
I could not care less. If we didn't watch that one random documentary, I wouldn't know who Sarge is, and I wouldn't really care.
But that brings us to our main show, and we join a program already in progress.
This is so dumb.
Some fake cooking show.
This is so dumb.
The guy doing a bad Louisiana accent.
Yeah, I think he's trying to go for like an Emeril Lagasse thing.
I don't know, but it's some fake cooking show, and Jeff Jarrett comes in, guitar's the guy, and I'm like, we've done this 3 weeks in a row, and
this
I don't get why.
This is the new way we open. You called it like, oh, I wonder if this is going to be the cold open now. I think you're right.
Watch them be done with it next week. Or they'll do it next week and then forget about it when they come back in January.
Yeah, maybe. Calls him a Bayou Bumpin' Slapnut.
We then get a previously on Nitro recap, Nitro opening and opening pyro, and on commentary, it's Tony Schiavone, Scott Hudson, and Emily, I believe for the last time.
God, I hope so.
Stevie Ray.
God, I hope so. If it's not, I think it's going to be the last time we hear from Tony Schiavone. That man is fucking over it.
Backstage, Mike Sanders and Lex Luger chat about some match that Lex wants. Ric Flair then comes out to the ring and says they're in Shreveport. And I had to look this up because I'm like, did you get the town wrong? Or is this one of those weird city limits things? Like, okay. It's...
I thought the same thing. I thought that he fucked up. But because there were no boos or no like weird response, I was like, I think it's fine. But no, Shreveport is like a big circle and Bossier City or wherever this is like right on the edge.
Oh, one of these weeks, Road Dogg's going to get fired for showing up fucked up and getting the town wrong.
Ooh.
leaving young Kay Quick to fend for himself.
Kay Quick?
R-Truth.
Oh, God.
You forget every time that I have to remind you that their theme is the Get Rowdy.
Get Rowdy, of course. I just feel like it's too early for R-Truth, but it's not.
Rick says that after last week, he has to talk about Steiner and Sid. He rules they cannot come in contact with each other inside this arena. That's very important.
Write that down.
On commentary, Stevie Ray basically says they should do the Starrcade main event on free television.
Oh, sure.
Like, yeah, that's how that works.
It's a great idea.
Ric Flair says if they break the rules, they will be suspended and Steiner will be stripped of the title. Flair then hints that Sting and Booker could be here tonight.
Anybody could be here. Anything can happen.
Even Arn Anderson, who gets notably less shares than Sting and Booker.
Anything could happen.
Ric Flair then books Scott Steiner versus Sergeant AWOL for the title.
That's our main event tonight. So I know we're only halfway through this. I had to watch this promo 3 times because Nick is doing a great job like clarifying what Ric Flair is saying. He's only using pronouns for like 90% of the promo, to the point where I have no idea which person he's talking about. He talks about like somebody from being suspended and somebody having a match tonight, and he's just using he and they. Who are they?
He was using street drugs.
It was wild. Like I felt like I was having a stroke watching it.
Mike Sanders interrupts Ric Flair and wants to make matches too. The crowd chants asshole. So Steve Ray tries to get Tony to repeat what the chant is.
That was so annoying. Mike Sanders says that Flair has a mad on.
Yes.
What the fuck is that?
That's something that like they wanted to use a hard on or something and
a mad
on. They're like, you can't say that, so
a mad on.
Sanders trips up while insulting the crowd, which is surprising because it's the same insult he uses every fucking week. Sanders books a 3-way dance of the perfect event, Jindrak and O'Hare, and the Insiders for later tonight. Ric Flair then randomly fires up and like does the jacket taken off, running
like,
the ropes.
He's about to start like stripping down.
He books Sid Vicious versus Mike Sanders, and if Sanders leaves, he's no longer commissioner, and if the Thrillers interfere, they're fired.
This is just a chaotic promo.
But
the energy here is weird.
Yeah, Flair showed energy here. I'm like, oh my God, it's a miracle.
But it was so out of nowhere. He didn't start the promo with energy, and he went from 0 to 100 really, really fast. And it felt jarring.
It didn't feel warranted.
No, it did not feel justified.
These two also don't have chemistry.
God, no. Mike Sanders sucks. How many times do you have to say that on this podcast? The man sucks. Also, at this point, Ric Flair is gassed. He is out of breath.
We then see earlier today, Lash LaRue said hello to Scott Steiner, and he took that personally.
Whoa.
He attacks Lash LaRue, and did you catch Steiner's quote here?
No.
I don't like you. I don't know you.
Give me back my purse. I don't know you.
AWOL makes the save. So I think we went to believe that's why that match got made.
Sure.
We then get Mean Gene with Sid Vicious. Sid immediately refers to his opponent as Rick Steiner.
Sure does. Rick Scott. Like, no one knows how to speak tonight. Like, it doesn't feel like anybody, practiced their promos or anything. So many trip-ups over sentences this week.
Sid says if he does touch Steiner, he's going to leave nothing left of him. And then he whispers, then cackles, then leaves. Ugh. The Sid experience.
Kinda, I guess, but, not good. And he's in a polo or a button down with a collar. He looks very dadly.
Yeah.
He also looks a little bit bigger. A little bit.
He's looking thick. But I noticed that when he first came back too.
But I thought that was the turtleneck effect. Because he was wearing the turtleneck the time he came back.
He's just not been in good shape.
Yeah.
He's not been on the road wrestling. He's been at home playing softball.
You're obsessed with the fact that he plays softball. I bet he doesn't play that much softball.
Emily, he's no-showed shows to go play softball.
Sure.
He cares about his softball.
I believe that, but I don't think that he is spending every minute of his free time, throwing pitches and going to the batting cages.
We then see Mark Jindrak and Sean O'Hare have stolen Goldberg's monitor on Mike Sanders' orders. This was such an elaborate setup that was not worth it.
What the fuck was this?
Sarge then arrives and he's looking for Mike Sanders. Disco shows up and insults him, so he pins Disco up against the door and shouts at him until he turns pink.
Disco was selling this a little bit of genuine fear. I think that Glenn was a little bit shaken.
Sarge and Brock Lesnar have the same circulatory system.
They do.
We then get Lance Storm and Major Guns coming out to the ring. Storm says they have a mixed tag match against the Cat and Miss Jones.
Ugh.
Storm then just suddenly pitches, all right, if the Cat loses, he has to sing the Canadian anthem on Thunder.
God.
We then see Santa Claus is suddenly in the crowd and no one flinches at this.
No one cares. I think it's Stevie Ray. It's like, oh, Santa Claus has come to town. Like, okay.
The cat and Miss Jones come out and he's the greatest, yada yada. He pitches the reverse stipulation where if Storm loses, he has to sing. So,
oh my God, who fucking cares? This is the stupidest stipulation. This one made me lose my mind a little bit. Like, have we really lost all creativity? Are we so out of ideas that it's like, oh, one of us is going to have to sing? Who the fuck could care?
I'll tell you who was out of ideas. Lance Storm ending this. He's like, I'm not worried because I don't lose. Jesus, like, that's not the big line you thought it was.
I don't care. I just don't care.
So the match starts. Cat wants the women to start the match, so he tags in Jones. Major Guns hits a drop kick, and I'm like, oh my God. And then hits terrible slaps and hair pulling. Like, oh, okay. There you go.
Yeah, it was a one-off. The crowd's a little bit hot for this, too, and I don't think it's just because of the women. I don't know, because they're hot throughout, and I don't understand why.
Miss Jones lightly bounces off the ropes, making Kelly Kelly look like Steve Austin.
Oh, God.
And she hits a roundhouse kick. Lance Storm breaks up the pin and pulls Guns to his corner to tag in. But Guns rolls out of the ring and tags Storm in from standing on the floor. And Stevie Ray and Scott Hudson call this out. Tony Schiavone just plows through. It's like, yeah. It's not worth it, Guns.
No, I don't care.
Scott actually comes up with something. He's like, oh, I guess it's these Canadian rules.
He's trying. It's not worth it.
And then they go into, well, as you know, since April, we've had pretty relaxed rules in WCW. I'm like, fuck me.
The rules pretty lax. Them's some pretty lax rules.
Aloha Cat leads to crotch chops and an elbow. Cat then hits a dancing uppercut and then a feline, but Guns puts Storm's foot on the ropes, so she and Jones cat fight.
Okay, so this one didn't make sense to me. So Lance Storm puts his foot on the rope, and then Major Guns like grabs his foot on top of the rope and like pulls it down.
I think
it looks like she's trying to like use leverage, but it doesn't work because that's not how leverage works.
I think what it was is Storm didn't trust Guns to hit the spot because she's supposed to put his foot on the rope.
Oh, she's supposed to like grab his foot? Yeah that didn't happen.
I think, yeah. He's like, I'm just going to make sure this happens. Oh, Elix Skipper then comes down to the ring, but the cat fights him off. Jim Duggan overthrows his 2x4 and the cat catches it.
But you don't see Duggan?
Yeah.
The 2x4 just comes out of nowhere. It's just like, surprise, there's wood.
He hits Storm with it. He hits Storm with it, then hits a roundhouse kick and gets the win. And notably, Duggan did not look all that sorry.
No, he looked like, oh, well, guess it happened. So I was trying to figure out, like, I'm putting a lot more thought into this show than I think is warranted. Because I'm like, is there some kind of beef? Like, even Stevie Ray was like, oh, now he's got some beef. And I had to, like, stop and ask you, like, what's going on? Is there dissension within the Canadians?
Yeah,
like,
that's been going on for weeks.
With Duggan and Lance?
Yeah, Storm's been pissed off that Duggan keeps fucking up.
I have not been noticing that.
Emily, I'll tell you right now, Jim Duggan on the upcoming Thunder leaves Team Canada.
I mean, that makes sense, but like, I haven't felt that he's trying to leave. I guess I'm just not like, I'm not getting it.
Post-match, Kat stomps Elix out of the ring so he has room to dance, and they do the cape thing. This match was perfectly fine. It just...
Who fucking cares?
Like, I have a hunch. Like, but my hunch was Storm's not going to sing the anthem and there's going to be no repercussions.
No. They're probably not even going to do anything about the anthem thing. Like, they're probably going to just drop it and forget.
Well, it's being taped later, so there are not days in between to forget.
Well, there are hours, though.
We then see Goldberg is here, and then we get a paid Jimmy Hart announcement. He's starting the Jimmy Hart Radio Network. And then he claims that he's going to fight these two radio DJs in Memphis when Nitro comes there.
He's got two already lined up. Better join in on this train.
I looked at the locations of every upcoming WCW show. There is not a single one in Memphis.
Do you think these DJs heard about this and were like, what the fuck is he talking about? Or maybe they're not even real DJs.
I don't even know.
God.
But yeah, if you're a radio DJ, you can come fight Jimmy Hart.
Please? I'm begging. Please.
Backstage, Lash Theroux is on the phone with Chavo. General Erection is annoyed at him and then tries to hype up the other members for their matches later on because Lash is facing Shane Douglas.
Yeah.
And the Wall has a fucking world title shot.
Why?
Because Steiner hit Lash Theroux.
And so like, we've mentioned that all the MIA people are starting to like go back to their old names. AWOL is still AWOL.
Yeah.
Phonetically. Did you notice the changing of the spelling during his match?
No, what was it?
We'll talk about it.
Okay. It's just A-Wall.
Yeah.
Which I think Admittedly, I forget it. Was it always that?
No, I think it was AWOL.
Yeah, they're not consistent.
Because in my head, it was like, is that MIA's way of being like soft launching back into calling him the Wall?
Elsewhere backstage, the Natural Born Thrillers are there. Sanders turns the three-way dance into a four corners match and adds Chronic. And Reno's mad because Chronic attacked him last week.
Got it. This is a very surface level story-wise episode. But on paper, watching it and experiencing it, I'm like, what the fuck is going on?
Well, our next person basically has that same question because Crowbar and Daphne join commentary and Crowbar's like, I don't know why I'm out here.
Yeah, he literally sits down and on mic says, does anybody know why I'm out here? I mean, he's still fantastic and I'm not going to be mad when Crowbar is on commentary, but him genuinely asking, why am I here?
At one point, Daphne notes, explaining her outfit, that she got into a fight with a couch and lost.
I can't remember what her outfit was.
It's just 60s gear, which, yeah. Why is which it 60s maybe. And not 70s?
Who fucking cares? It's like, because Crowbar and Mike Awesome are not together anymore, I forget that they're supposed to be like those 70s guys. Because they're kind of not. Crowbar just looks cool.
Norman Smiley then comes out to the ring.
Woo.
We haven't seen him on Nitro in a little while.
No, it's been a minute.
I guess actually out in the ring because he got attacked last week.
Yeah. But no, it's been a minute since we've seen him in the ring.
But he brings out his bin of weapons and grabs a mic and he's like, all right, I'm back to doing hardcore matches. And I'm like, brother, you stopped?
He wasn't really doing anything.
He issues an open challenge to hopefully earn a hardcore title match.
Which I guess that's why Crowbar is out here.
Yeah, but like, Norman, if you had just asked Crowbar, he probably would have just said yes. But Meng answers the challenge alongside Paisley and her afro. Norman Smiley throws on shoulder pads and Meng just beats him down to start the match.
These shoulder pads, I can't tell if he's like intentionally fumbling with it because it seems like he's really struggling to get those on. I think it played into the like funny of it. But he was having a rough time.
Norman throws Meng face first into the trash can and he no-sells it. They brawl up the ramp and throw each other into the barricade. Norman tries a headbutt, but it hurts him because, you know.
Samoans are bricks.
And they brawl over to the DJ Rand booth.
DJ Rand mentioned.
How the fuck are you still paying him?
What? That's a great question. Oh man, we haven't had a Surge watch in a while, but we also haven't had a DJ Rand sighting, so we're getting something.
We have Sarge watch.
Sarge watch. Ooh.
Next to the DJ Rand booth, Santa Claus is there, so Norman tries to take Santa Claus's sack and hits Meng with it.
Yeah, so he's using the sack of gifts as a weapons bag, which is kind of cool.
They keep brawling as commentary argues whether or not it was okay to hit Santa. The two go back to ringside, and Norman puts Santa's sack back in the ring, which is filled with, like, Nitro toys.
Yeah, so it's a legitimate sack. I don't like calling it a sack. That sounds phallic.
I know, but I couldn't think of another word.
There's no bag. Yeah.
Norman throws toys at Meng, and then Santa Claus gets in the ring, and he throws powder at both men. And
pocket sand.
The match is thrown out. I'm like, okay, that seems kind of lame for a hardcore match, but...
I think they tried to write off the pocket sand as, like, chimney dust, which I appreciated the lore.
Snow.
No, like, somebody did say this on commentary, like, oh, it's the dust from those chimneys.
But Santa pulls Paisley in the way of a Tongan death grip from a blinded Meng.
Yo, Santa sucks.
Then takes off his hat and beard to reveal Terry Funk.
What? I was actually not expecting to see him back on WCW again.
Quibi then comes down, is also put in the Tongan death grip by a blinded Meng. Funk hits Norman with a chair, and then has to hit Meng twice to get him to drop the hold, and then hits like a third, fourth, and fifth shot to actually knock him down.
He destroys this chair.
Yeah.
I think two chairs get absolutely decimated during all of this.
Well, you could actually see and hear Meng, like, kind of start, like, leaning on Terry, and Terry goes, like, no, like, you gotta get up for one more.
Oh, no.
Because Meng didn't drop clean, so it's like, all right.
Try again.
Yeah. Terry Funk then grabs a mic and says he's the real Santa Claus, so.
Poor children.
Apparently, he killed Tim Allen and then put the suit on.
God.
He then hits Queeby with a chair.
I do always forget that movie is about murder.
He says he's going to give the perverts out there a Christmas gift. 11 hoes.
All at one time.
And he doesn't really do it clean. He's like, ho, 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 no. Ho, ho, ho.
No, he does. He does that. He does it well. He goes, ho, 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 ho. He does it well.
Okay.
Give him credit where it's due.
I didn't find the rhythm in this.
Oh, I felt the rhythm. The rhythm's going to get you. But no, he did 11 hoes and it made sense.
Funk focuses on Crowbar and calls him into the ring, challenges Crowbar to a title match at Starrcade.
And then Crowbar is like, Honestly, yeah, I'd be honored. Like, that sounds wonderful. Fuck you!
Yeah, Terry Funk fucking kills him with a chair shot to the head to end the segment. And this was so chaotic.
It was so chaotic.
I couldn't help but love it.
I mean, yeah. And especially that ending where Crowbar was just so genuine, like, yeah, you're like my childhood hero.
Bam!
I'm like, ah, fuck you!
But yeah, sometimes a return at the right time can really bring the energy it needs, and this just did that.
Yeah. I have a feeling this is going to be my Starcade best bit.
I was happy to see him, but I'm like, this feels like a weird use of Terry Funk gone for, like, God knows how long.
When's the last time we saw him?
It's been a long time.
Yeah.
We still eventually get Dustin Rhodes coming back.
Jesus. Well, somebody's got to fill the hole that Sid's about to grace us with.
So, Terry Funk is not the only Santa you and I need to talk about.
Oh, God.
Because we kind of forgot on the last episode, and we kind of forgot on this episode.
Because it's a forgetful thing. We watched our, so far, one and only holiday film of the year. Yeah. We need to get on that. We need to be watching some more holiday movies. We watched Santa's Sleigh.
Starring Bill Goldberg.
Woof. What a film. It is a speedy 90 minutes, though. Thank God.
I don't even know if it was 90.
It was going for an hour and a half.
And I feel like it was even shorter, and then they had to call in some favors. Because that opening scene does not relate to anything else. I think they went, fuck, we got to add more time to this thing.
So the plot of this film is, and correct me if I'm wrong, Santa lost a bet 2,000 years ago, and because he lost this bet, he has to be nice to children and bring them toys and holiday cheer and whatever.
The one thing you're missing is that he is a demon.
Right. Santa Claus is a demon and he lost a bet. This is year 2001. So it is the first year that he no longer has to adhere to this bet. So now he gets to go back to his demonic ways.
Emily, how long did you say the movie was?
90 minutes.
78.
Woof. Breezy. That's a quick one. This movie, that is all the plot you get. I could not tell you another character. I could not tell you a B plot. I could not tell you anything else. If you like violence, this is the movie for you.
Well, it has Claire from Lost.
Oh, yeah. Emily DeRaven, yes.
It follows this random kid whose grandfather is, like, really into the lore of all this and really into, like, has like a panic room and everything.
Yeah, so he's like a Santa Claus historian who knew this day was coming, I guess.
And it's later revealed that he is the angel who Santa lost the bet to.
I forgot about that lore drop. Oops.
Honestly, the guy who plays the grandfather is not putting in a bad day at the office.
No?
I thought his acting was serviceable.
For a 78-minute film?
Yeah, he's probably the best actor in the film.
Wow.
I mean,
bar is low.
Yeah, Goldberg's not doing much. But this was fucking wild. I think it's available free somewhere if you want to just watch a bad movie.
Probably on Tubi.
Fucking honestly. James Caan is in the opening scene. I'm like, why are you here?
Yeah. It's probably on Pluto TV or Tubi or one of those for free. Like, do not spend money on this. Where did we watch it?
I see one of those.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's like not really anything of note in that fucking movie.
It's just sad that is the only holiday film we have watched.
Actually,
I need to go watch some Love Actually.
What they're going to notice, they left it almost on a cliffhanger to like, oh.
Could be Santa Sleigh 2.
Yeah, the big payoff is they kill his reindeer. That's the big climax.
That's it. Yeah. Don't watch that film. Let's say don't watch that film sober.
Yeah.
Or alone. I think that's a group movie. Like, watch it with a buddy, have a couple beers, laugh at it.
Well, let's move on. We get a Starcade ad, and then Sarge busts into Mike Sanders' office, and he wants a match with Lex Luger tonight.
He just comes in yelling.
Sanders says no to tonight, but he can face him on Thunder if he does Sanders a favor. And we have to wait to see what the favor is.
What could it be?
Elsewhere, the Harris boys find cartoonish-looking sandwiches just loose on a table.
Yeah, there's not even, like, a napkin under them. Yeah. It is just one of those comically long...
Like Scooby-Doo.
Very Scooby-Doo-esque. One long sub that is, like, cut up a little bit. No plates, no napkins, no accoutrement, no mustard, nothing. Nope, just sandwich. So, of course, they eat it because they're feral. And then we get a cut to the locker room where the filthy animals are sitting and watching all of this.
Yes, which always makes me question. So they are watching the show, which means they could see the Harris boys.
Yes.
Then it cuts to them.
Yes.
So they are watching themselves.
Yes. Yes, it gets very meta.
Well, we only see Conan and Kidman to start, and then they're like, hey, Ray, come look at this. And he's inside a suitcase.
Conan just taps the suitcase that's at their feet, and Ray Mysterio just kind of pops out. Like, he was just taking a little nap in the suitcase. Why?
I don't know.
What is... Okay, I had a question for you. Has Rey Mysterio been inducted into the Hall of Fame yet? It's already happened. Damn it! Billy Kidman wasn't there? Billy Kidman wasn't part of it?
I mean, he's probably there, but...
But he wasn't, like, part of it.
The Hall of Fame is so much smaller now. I
want to see Billy Kidman and Rey Mysterio talk about their time as animals together.
I did watch something recently from, like, 2003 or 2004, and it was, like, people were, like, taking bets on a match... And had the APA, and Ray was there, and Kidman was also there. I'm like, oh, they're still buddies.
Buddies! Like, they have to be friends. Like, they still work for the company together. Like, they have to sometimes be like, hey, what have they got the horns? Come on.
I think it was 2003, because it was a jump scare of blonde APA Bradshaw. That's Ooh. Such a weird timeline.
Ooh, I don't like that.
So we get more on this whole situation later. Then get Mean Gene with Scott Steiner and Medeja. Steiner says he doesn't care what Rick has to say, and he's like, oh, Sid begged Flair to keep him away. He's not sweating AWOL. I don't blame him.
No.
And he's like, Ric Flair's trying to wear me down.
Yeah, I don't think that anybody should be afraid of AWOL.
We then get Pamela with the MIA. AWOL is mad that Steiner jumped Lash, who was standing next to him, so clearly it wasn't that bad a beatdown.
But even Pam does not seem to know what to do with these three, because this segment gets hijacked immediately. Like, Hugh Morris just is like, nah. Fuck you, Pam. I got it. I'll take it from here.
Yeah, Rexxon shouts about facing Douglas at Starrcade, then hypes up that Lash has a match in Louisiana. And Lash starts talking, but stumbles over his words a bit. And
again?
Rexxon interrupts him, and he's like, oh, yeah, you were using the same words that like Chavo's been using.
Oh, my God.
So we do things the right way.
More dissension.
Mike Sanders then comes out to the ring and has a piece of paper. It says that he is not medically cleared, and then we get Sid Vicious coming out in street clothes.
Yeah, so what was he trying to claim he was not medically cleared for? Like,
he has a match with Sid, so
well,
it's like,
no,
oh.
But he's like, oh, my shoulder, or my knee, or whatever.
We see a clip from last week, and Stevie Ray has no idea who Oklahoma is during the recap.
Good Lord.
Watch the fucking show, Stevie. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Mike Sanders then wants to shake hands with Sid, and like, all right, we'll be on our way. So Sid shakes his hand. Then it's a clothesline, then it's a big boot, spine buster, hits the choke slam, then a power bomb, and pins him with 1 foot.
Yep. That's exactly what you expected it to be.
Like, it's not as cathartic as you want it to be.
No, but also, like, Ric Flair earlier was like, if you don't do this match, then you are fired. He tried to not do the match. So does that make him, like, potentially fired? Like, he came out and tried to get out of it.
He did the match, so.
He reluctantly, at best.
Yeah, that's way too much of a technicality there.
It'd be nice if he was fired, though.
The insiders are here.
Goody.
Backstage, Sid accosts a cop to be like, give me the keys to all the cars.
Every car.
And he's like, I don't have them. So Sid attacks him. I'm like, brother.
What did this man do? Oh, we do get a little preview. I guess it's a preview. It's an additional stumble over words of Sid trying out his new catchphrase.
Oh, right. Yeah, sorry. At the end of that last segment. Sid grabs a mic and he's like, all right, Stevie, tell suckers that mama said it'd be that way sometimes.
And that might have been like the best impression that you could have possibly done. Because it did not flow. It was so out of left field for Sid to say something like that. And he was not confident in what he was saying.
I think he hit suckers so hard that he's like,
he took himself out of it.
Yeah.
It's like, ooh, try that again.
We then get the blocking special, which I love, as Reno and Marie are at a full stop at the end of a hallway.
And like a middle school. This did not look like backstage of an arena.
Yep, and they're so far away, they start walking as the scene starts. Chronic then start walking in the hallway in front of them, and Reno hits them with a pipe, and they no-sell it, and then beat him down. Marie just vanishes here, and then Vito makes the save. The Natural Born Thrillers separate everybody. Vito shouts at Chronic and implies a Vito and Reno versus Chronic Starrcade match. The Thrillers then vanish, and Marie comes back in as Vito and Reno hug. It's like, oh, okay.
Cool.
Clearly they're struggling with these different groups.
Yeah.
But notably, Reno attacked Chronic. That'll come up in a second here.
Cool.
Because our next match, it's meant to be a four corners match, but ends up back as the three corner or whatever the fuck it's... Three-way dance.
Yeah. So it went from a three-way dance to a four corners match back to a three-way dance. So all of that finagling in between didn't matter.
It's the Insiders versus the Perfect Event versus Jindrak and O'Hare. And all the Thrillers come out together. Sean Hudson's like, yeah, they're not even trying to pretend, are they?
No.
And weirdly, this match has a member from each team, so three people in the ring at all times.
Yes.
Which is not normally how these matches work.
So how do these usually go?
It's usually like two people in? Yeah.
Okay.
Because we just watched one of these at World War III.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, it's you tag in and out.
It's broken because it got Hall and Nash in there together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But clearly this is done this way just because they want the match to work a certain way.
Yeah. This match is, like, we'll talk about it, obviously. But this match is chaotic, but not in a fun chaos way. Not in a WCW chaos way. In a, like, none of us know what's going on chaos kind of way.
Okay, I kind of disagree.
Yeah?
I didn't hate this match.
The energy of it was weird. It didn't feel like anybody in this match was confident in what their next move was or what the result was going to be.
Nash fights off O'Hare and Palumbo until a jungle kick from Palumbo.
A jungle kick?
That's what they named it. Whoa. I don't know why. Okay. It was just like a super kick. Like a jungle kick. I'm like, okay.
A jungle kick. All right.
Palumbo and O'Hare hit a double suplex, but Nash hits a double clothesline. The other three then tag in, and DDP fights off both men with his signature moves until a low blow and a DDT. The Thrillers double team Page in a neutral corner. Stevie Ray asks, all right, what happens if the Insiders lose here? And Tony Schiavone really has to struggle around saying, well, basically nothing.
Not much matters.
DDP locks in a sleeper on Stasiak, and then Jindrak locks in a sleeper on DDP. A Stasiak jawbreaker results in unintentional friendly fire, and Stevie Ray calls that a triple jawbreaker, implying that Sean Stasiak somehow hit a move on himself.
Yep. Why is Stevie Ray here, man? How does he keep coming back?
The other three tag in again, which made me laugh, because, yeah, it was just two groups of three doing stuff. Like, there's very little interaction outside of your little group.
Yeah.
Nash awkwardly cleans house, hits a big boot on Palumbo, then hits a jackknife to him. Mark Jindrak hits a diving clothesline, and Sean O'Hare goes up top. I got really worried here, because Kevin Nash is lying in line with Sean O'Hare standing on the top rope, and I'm like, you need him to be turned 90 degrees for a Shauntan bomb. Jindrak actually spots this and starts, like, moving bodies. Oh, like, good on you,
man. Good for Jindrak.
And O'Hare is just balancing, standing completely vertical on the top rope.
Great.
So O'Hare hits the Shauntan bomb. Then he and Charles Robinson argue in the corner. So DDP comes in to hit a diamond cutter on Jindrak. Mm-hmm. DDP then forgets his spot because he leaves the ring and Sean Stasiak's holding a title belt to hit him. So DDP has to come back in the ring looking at Sean Stasiak.
This is the chaos that I was talking about. Like, no one knows what's happening next.
That was just DDP. I don't know.
It's not just that point, though. Like, that was a highlight of my point. But it was throughout the match. It was little pieces like that. That was like nothing really flowed together. And everyone was like very insecure.
Well, the other weird thing is Stasiak hits Paige with the title. And then pulls Palumbo on top of Kevin Nash, who is still out from the Swanton Bomb, and Palumbo wins. And then post-match, the Thrillers keep beating down Nash as we go to commercial. And post-match, we see that the Thrillers had apparently been smashing Nash's knee into the ring post, but somehow Kevin Nash is knocked out, so he doesn't have to sell any of this.
First of all, Kevin Nash is not knocked out, because did you see his face when he got pinned?
No.
The man was giggling. The man had a smile on his face and was actively laughing. This is one of those moments where I'm like, do I hate Kevin Nash or do I fucking love Kevin Nash? Because I think in this moment, I love Kevin Nash.
I don't know what the spot would have been that would have knocked him out, though.
No, because there wasn't one. He was actively laughing when he got pinned.
No, but they smash his leg and he doesn't sell it because he's acting knocked out. And I'm like,
he doesn't want to. He doesn't want to. And he doesn't have to. Yeah.
This definitely was chaos energy. I didn't hate it.
It wasn't the right kind of chaos.
Admittedly, a small part of me might have been more okay with this because you had the right team win as opposed to last week where they just squashed three count for no fucking reason.
Yeah, that's fair. It was a weird kind of chaos. I usually like chaos. I'm okay with chaos 90% of the time. This one was just, it didn't match. It was like all three teams had a different idea of how chaotic to be. And none of their versions match each other. Anyway, Sid stole a minivan.
Yeah, we go to the parking lot. Sid parks a car near a few others. And we never really get a wide shot of this.
No, we have no idea how many cars are involved.
We then see DDP and Kevin Nash are chatting and Nash's knee is hurt.
Yeah, he's like nursing his knee.
We then get Sarge, Dwayne Bruce, coming out to the ring. And
to Apple stock music.
Yes, I didn't catch this.
The music that Sarge walks out to is I meant to look it up. It is in iMovie or Final Cut Pro. It is one of these stock music options that you can choose short, medium, or long for. This is like Skateboard 1. I don't know. I've used this song so many times. When it played, I was like, I fucking know this song.
Admittedly, I don't remember if it was a dub or if WCW just went, fuck it.
I think that. Well, no, they can't have, WCW couldn't have. That song did not exist in 2000. So no. It must have been the dub.
I didn't get this until commentary actually had to explain it to me. Goldberg starts coming out to the ring, yes. And commentary's like, Goldberg doesn't know who he's facing. Because remember, yeah. At the start of the show, when the Thrillers took the monitor out of Goldberg's dressing room.
Oh, so that was why.
That was why. That was the big setup.
So, they took... Okay, so, in their mind, the only way for Goldberg to know what's going on the show is from that one TV in his dressing room.
I guess.
He doesn't ever leave or walk around or see anybody else that's there, chat with anybody. Okay.
And maybe I'm stupid, but I never assumed Goldberg didn't know who he was facing.
I didn't either, but his reaction, he sold it well.
Yeah. Yeah, he acts better here than he does in fucking Santa's sleigh.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Goldberg comes out to the stage and is doing his whole entrance, and he, stops doing the, punch pyro because he sees, oh, shit, I'm facing Sarge.
Yeah, and he has, an internal issue with that. That's his guy.
The camera gets really close to a face-to-face for these two, and Sarge is like, we have to fight, and Goldberg's like, I don't want to. Notably, the bell has rung
here.
Yes. Because Lex Luger then comes out to remove any subtext from this segment.
Yeah. If you didn't get it, don't worry, you don't have to.
And he's like, because the bell rang, if you come after me, you will lose by count-out, and then you're gone. And it's like... So you have to beat down the guy you like, the guy who trained you, and you're going to hate it, and it's going to make you really sad, Bill, isn't it?
Jesus.
So Goldberg just goes to leave. He actually would have just been like, okay, I guess I'm done.
Yeah, I don't blame him, but Sarge was kind of like, that's not an option. I will not allow you to think that that's an option. I don't know why Sarge is so hellbent on fighting Goldberg.
Because if Bill leaves, he's gone from WCW forever.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that was why. It was if you don't fight him, you're
fired.
Yeah, per the Russo stipulation, which is gotcha. Still here.
Oh, right. I forgot about the stupid streak.
Yeah. Sarge fucking wallops him.
Yeah. Sarge is like, you're going to want to fight me right now.
And he's like, fight me. Bill's like, nope. So Goldberg eventually spears Sarge and doesn't want to jackhammer him. Sarge grabs the foot to stop Goldberg from leaving again. It's like, brother, you could have just pinned him after the spear. Yeah. He was dead.
Yeah.
It was actually kind of rude of you to
Man
not
was
do it.
Dead to rights.
But yeah, Sarge stops him. Goldberg hits a jackhammer, pins Sarge, and then carries him to the back over his shoulder.
I love that.
I'm amazed they didn't do the fucking Cain and Abel.
This is their version of that.
Yeah. This was a bit. This was very melodramatic, but yes. I thought well executed for the melodramatic story. They
oh,
wanted.
Yeah. I thought it was fine.
The main problem is I don't care about Sarge.
Because we've not been given a reason to. Again, you and I would not know who this man is if we didn't stumble upon an OSW documentary.
I would have known, but...
Would you have known Sarge?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because he's been in the company before. He was, he was like Bronn the Leprechaun, too.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, Dungeon of Doom hits different. Fuck me, we might get that in the,
on the Patreon?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
I know. Actually, who am I kidding? He's not making it to pay-per-view.
Hey, maybe in a recap.
Well, he wasn't a leprechaun, but he was in World War III.
Sarge?
Yeah.
Was he one of the 60 names you rattled off?
Yes.
Wow. If you want to hear Nick talk real fast because I was about to kill him, go over to our Patreon and listen to him rattle off 60 wrestlers' names.
What a great sales pitch.
What a sell.
You want to hear Nick read the phone book? Go over to the Patreon.
Pretty much.
Backstage, Jamie Noble approaches Daphne, Crowbar, Kiwi, and Meng, which is just a weird group to be hanging out.
That is a weird group.
He needs advice for teaming with Evan Courageous, but he's interrupted by Evan Courageous, who's like, Sid's doing something crazy outside. Everyone come look.
I think he was asking for friendship advice.
Yeah.
For Evan. This is kind of cute.
Well, because everybody was like, what are you doing? He was like, guys, I just want advice. Like,
I just
want
to talk to my friend. But yeah, Sid's doing something crazy. Y'all got to come look in the parking lot. Wonder what it could be.
Tony Schiavone then plugs the Lance Storm shirt. And I'm like, why are you only plugging shirts for the heels?
Because I don't think there are other shirts.
I don't know, but...
I think there are three shirts.
MIA has a shirt.
For sale, though?
Probably.
Oh, I don't know. In my head, there's the two Canadian shirts, the...
Slapnuts,
and NWO.
I think Goldberg has a shirt.
Goldberg does have a shirt. Goldberg has a book.
Yeah. Our next match broke me. It's Shane Douglas versus Corporal Cajun.
I'm sorry, who?
I think they do call him Corporal Cajun.
They flipped in between. It was Corporal Cajun, Lash LaRue, Corporal Lash, Corporal LaRue. Like, I don't know.
Shane Douglas has a mic and notes that someone isn't here with him. He does not say Tori's name.
Yeah, he mentions someone's not with him. And Stevie Ray, bless his heart, on commentary, interrupts and goes, his yak.
Oh, that's not what he says first.
Oh.
He goes, I didn't even notice. I'm like... And then he implies Rection intentionally hurt Tori. I'm like, are you a heel now? Douglas says he's going to speed up the MIA breakup by taking out Corporal Cajun. Corporal Cajun does not get the big reaction I think they were expecting for him.
No. He's the Louisiana boy, and you're in Shreveport. Like, that should have been your hometown boy. No. No one cares.
Match starts. Cajun takes Douglas down, then hits a back body drop and a drop kick. Cajun hits a scoop slam and a snap suplex, followed by working Douglas over in the corner, then hits a head scissor to the floor. Cajun hits a suicide dive onto the franchise and then throws him onto the announcer table. In the ring, Douglas does like the running the ropes drop down for no reason. It was a weird thing.
Yeah.
Cajun runs over top of him, and then Douglas hits a power slam in like his first offense of the match. It was like weirdly one-sided for Corporal Cajun to start.
It was, yeah. It wasn't bad, though.
It was kind of nothing, but...
It was basic, but it wasn't bad.
Both men go down on a double clothesline, and then Chavo Guerrero is suddenly at ringside holding a chair. He offers it to Cajun, and Cajun isn't sure whether or not to take it, but eventually does, and hits Douglas with it.
But meanwhile, while that whole negotiation was happening between Chavo and Lash with the chair, Shane Douglas was wrapping his fist in a chain.
Yes. The referee calls for a disqualification.
Yes.
Why now?
You can't be mad that they're finally doing it.
They're not going to be consistent with it, and you know it.
No, because the rules are lax. We've talked about this. They're pretty lax rules.
Yeah. On this show, we had a hardcore match ended in a no contest and an actual DQ.
The rules are pretty lax.
Now, admittedly, this gets even dumber. Because I was pissed about the DQ.
Yeah, you were.
And then... Corporal Cajun's like, I saw him wrapping his fist with the chain. No, you fucking didn't,
absolutely
you liar.
Not. There's no chance in hell that he saw any of that. Unless you have eyes in the bottom of your feet.
Yeah,
you
I'm like, was he lying or is this just bad storytelling?
That one.
Post-match, Douglas hits Cajun with a chain. Jenna Erection comes out to save Cajun and then argues with Chavo.
Cool.
The DQ of this angered me so fucking
so this
much.
Is your worst bit?
Yeah, yeah, I think so. Like, Jeff Jarrett's not allowed to fucking wrestle if we're not if we can't do chair shots.
Yeah.
Yeah, my actual note in all caps is, oh, so that's a DQ. Fuck off. Well, speaking of Jeff Jarrett, he approaches the Harris boys with a bag of sandwiches, and they're like, oh, we already ate the sandwiches, and by God, all six, like, multi-foot-long subs are gone.
Yeah. Again, cartoons.
Oh, and we didn't note, if you can piece this together, the Filthy Animals put laxatives in the sandwiches.
They do make this very explicit later, but yeah.
Oh, during the other segment, he actually says laxatives, so.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, yeah, so that's the prank. That's why the Filthy Animals were watching, because these big dumb Nazis ate a poop sandwich.
See, you say poop sandwiches, I think X-Pac.
What do you mean?
X-Pac would occasionally prank people by taking a shit in their sandwich. See,
nope, that's just cruel. Yeah. That's just abusive.
When NC Sid is parking another car. Then we get Pamela Paulshock with Mike Awesome. Awesome recaps the history of him and Bam Bam. And apparently after getting hit with an ambulance door, the career killer is itching to come out. And he wants an ambulance match for Starrcade.
So we got an ambulance match.
Yep.
She literally says ambulance.
And Emily... That is the last thing she is going to say in WCW.
No.
That we are done with Pam.
The last thing she says is ambulance?
Yeah. Aww. She gone.
I'm kind of sad.
Yeah.
Pamela. Damn, I'm kind of sad about that.
Yeah, she gets
fun.
She gets released sometime over the break.
Yeah.
And yeah, this is it for Pam.
Oh, man. Not the ambulance.
She's a Baltimore person. I think
call an ambulance.
I think we kind of forget.
She's from Baltimore?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Man, Baltimore just makes really pretty blonde women, don't they?
Emily, you're not from here.
I am now. Military rules. I'm from here.
Any last words on Pam?
Man, no more pumpkins. I'm actually kind of sad.
Yeah, it's winter now.
No, more pumpkins. The pumpkins have died.
Yeah, she wasn't good. She really
was terrible. But she never got there. I loved her.
Now she never got there. She was still better than fucking Lenita Erickson.
We never even saw her.
No, I played the clip for you though.
Yeah, no, I loved Pamela. Like, she was so bad at her job. My God, bless her heart. But I loved her.
Yeah, it does make you realize that Mean Gene actually does have talent.
Yeah.
Like, that actually does require some skill.
It does. It requires chemistry, too. It requires being able to build relationships to work off of. And Pamela just did not do that. She just let her, like, she let the boys walk all over her.
Yeah, and I know they were trying her out as a ring announcer. They didn't get there.
Ooh, no.
I think it's somebody else who, like, was a bad interviewer, but was a good announcer. Lillian Garcia, I did not like as a backstage interviewer.
Oh, I don't like her as a ring announcer.
I think she's fine.
I really don't like her voice.
I don't think she's goated like WWE right. wants you to think she is.
I also don't like Alicia Taylor.
Fucking bring back Chimmel.
Fine, sure. I don't like the welcome to SmackDown. I just don't like that. That's not my style. I want more Michael Buffer. I want it to be more classical.
Did you just praise Michael Buffer?
I did.
Well, we mentioned Gene. Let's go to him backstage with Jeff Jarrett and the Harris Boys. Gene notes they have an elimination tag match tonight, and the Harris Brothers are not doing well here. And they have a quote.
It's actually really funny.
Really, yeah.
It's really funny.
One of them goes, "If I move, something's going to happen."
Oh, I moved. And then he runs off.
And I'm like, I don't know if it's actually funny or just like seeing the Harris Boys implied to be shitting their pants.
Nazis pooping their pants is funny.
Our next match.
Oh, I moved.
It's supposed to be the Filthy Animals versus Jeff Jarrett and the Harris Brothers in an elimination tag match. But the Harris Brothers come out with Jeff Jarrett and they're still not looking good. One bails before they even get to ringside.
Yeah.
Other one actually gets to the steps and calls it quits.
There was another funny line. I'm sorry. The one that makes it to ringside, I think it was Heavy D, because Stevie Ray on commentary goes, "Hey, Tony, what's the D stand for?" Diarrhea.
Tony Schiavone has maybe one of the worst lines I've heard from him.
Oh, my God.
You know, this is kind of comical.
Oh, honey.
Thanks for breaking that down, Tony.
Announcer of the year right here, folks.
I think he wins worst announcer, and I'm like, he should not.
He should not have won
Stevie
worst
Ray
announcer.
And Mark Madden exist.
Oh, man. He was fighting for his life. I think at the end of the podcast, we need to give overall MVP to Tony Schiavone for powering through. Bless that man. He's doing the Lord's work. I don't know.
Jeff Jarrett attacks Conan from behind to start. Conan leapfrogs, then hits his back kick and face buster, followed by his rolling clothesline. Ray and Kidman just come in to hit a double team move. Then Jarrett low blows Conan, and then back body drops Kidman to the floor, hits a stroke on Conan, and eliminates him. And then Jarrett's music hits for a second after that pin. I'm like, why? Did you guys forget? Also, spoilers, Jarrett doesn't win this match, so you shouldn't
spoilers.
Even have that queued up. Rey Mysterio comes in, and Kidman drops Jarrett on the ropes for a springboard leg drop from Rey. Jarrett hits a stalling suplex while flexing during. I'm like, dude, it's Rey Mysterio. He's quite small.
Yeah, what are you flexing for?
Jarrett wants a powerbomb, but Ray manages to make the tag before getting powerbombed. Kidman hits a missile dropkick on Jarrett, then hits a head scissors and a very light DDT. Kidman goes up top and hits a diving splash, and I'm like, I still get faked out when he goes up.
Yeah.
I'm ready for the shooting star press.
When was the last time you hit that? That was like a long time ago.
I think pre-reboot.
Jeez.
I think he feuded with Hogan and he went, I'm not taking that, brother.
Jeez. That does not work for me, brother.
Kidman hits a baseball slide to the groin in the corner, and then Ray hits a Bronco Buster. Stevie Ray calls it a face full of stuff, and Tony Schiavone just looks at him and goes, "You get it wrong every week." It's like, he's done.
You always get it wrong, Stevie.
Jarrett crotches Ray on the ropes, which somehow bumps the ref when Ray's on his way down.
Physics, I don't know.
Jarrett turns Kidman faction into a back suplex, then grabs his guitar and smashes the fuck out of Kidman.
Oh, God, yeah.
Behind the ref's back. Ray then hits a springboard sunset flip on Jarrett for the win while Jarrett's holding the guitar. I'm like, dude, just drop it.
He's fine.
Then Ray and Jarrett awkwardly stare each other down over Kidman post-match. It was like...
Yeah, that was weird.
Yeah, I don't know what was supposed to happen
there. I didn't understand what that one was. Just putting a little, like, period on the match, maybe?
This was a well-worked match because it's Jeff Jarrett, Rey Mysterio, Billy Kidman.
Yeah, it was fine. This was never going to be worst match of the night.
Yeah, it just it didn't get enough time. Like, nothing does anymore.
No.
I am glad they got Conan out early because I'm like, yeah, I need to see the least of you.
Yeah, and that's true.
I'm like, but he's probably fucking hurt or something, knowing Conan. Yeah. The man's always hurt. The dynamics of Jeff Jarrett lately are kind of weird. They keep having him fight from underneath and overcome adversity. And I'm like, he's the heel. Stop having him do that. Any other thoughts before we move on?
No, I mean, the biggest note I had was the Tony Schiavone line. Just like, fucking hell, Stevie. Get your shit together.
We got another Starrcade ad, and then Sid parks another car, and then says, if they can't fight in there, they'll fight out here.
So he's essentially made a ring of cars. So, like, that is the arena.
Yeah, very loose circle based on that last parking job. There's a lot of room there.
Yeah.
Also, in his promo with Mean Gene, he did not insinuate he was going to do this at all. Like, you kind of needed him to do that, to set this up.
That's true. Yeah, it just looks like he's robbing people's cars.
Yeah, just have him go, well, if we can't fight in here,
we'll find somewhere else.
I have an idea. It's even that. Yeah. Just something to set it up.
Yeah.
Rather than going up to a cop going, give me the keys!
But you love that.
That brings us to our main event.
Jesus Christ.
Scott Steiner versus Sergeant AWOL.
Again, who could fucking care? Who could care? Why the fuck is AWOL in the main event? I know it's Nitro, but like, why is it AWOL against Scott Steiner? Why is AWOL getting a chance for the belt?
Yeah,
why?
We can do non-title matches. That is allowed.
I don't think so.
Steiner has a mic and says that Ric Flair is a lucky man for changing his mind about stripping him of the title. And says if he ever gets stripped of the title, he will go to Flair's house and kick his ass. Like, I was ready for so much worse.
Anything else, yeah.
I was ready for something I was going to be like, ooh, that's uncomfortable to have to repeat. Like, no.
Nope.
I really thought, like, the wife would get a mention or something.
Is he still married?
I think so. I mean,
I don't remember when they get divorced.
We saw his family earlier this year, so.
That's fair, but I just don't remember when that divorce happens.
But in general, it really seems like they're setting up for Ric Flair versus Scott Steiner, which is not something that happens.
It doesn't happen?
No.
Oh. Because it does feel like that, especially like with this beginning promo. It really does feel like that.
But like for weeks, just like, oh yeah, they are at odds. So it's like, it seems like they really want you to think they're going to do that. But
Nick, Ric Flair can't have a match. He's retired. And you know once you retire, you can't come back.
Yeah, Ric Flair especially.
He's retired. We're recording this on the day of John Cena's retirement match, too. So we'll see if he comes back. I'm still not convinced. I'm so not convinced that we don't see. I think John Cena's going to come back at like fucking Elimination Chamber or something. I'm so unconvinced.
Saudi Mania is the one everyone's like.
Maybe. Saudi Rumble.
Anyway, AWOL comes out with a table and gets stomped getting in the ring and then gets stomped in the corner. AWOL eventually hits some strikes in the corner and it's a big boot and then they do the same spot but with a clothesline. Steiner gets a boot up in the corner, hits a spinning belly to belly. Scott hits his flexing elbow, then does push-ups and throws AWOL to the floor and hits a chair shot on the outside.
Wow.
DQ?
No, because fuck you.
The fact that they, you know what it is? The fact that they actually call for the DQ means I'm right to keep asking. That's actually my issue with it.
Oh my God.
Steiner grabs a lead pipe, but AWOL hits Steiner with a chair a few times. AWOL throws Steiner in the ring and then puts the table in after. Wall hits a clothesline and power slams him, then hits a choke slam, and then sets up the table in the ring as commentary's like, why are you not trying to pin him? You're stupid.
Well,
admittedly, Scott Steiner's up in like a second and a half, so you would not have pinned
him.
Wall wants to choke slam Steiner through the table, but Steiner stops him, and it's a T-bone suplex through the table, which also sent him kind of into the ropes. It was not a fun landing. Scott then locks in a Steiner recliner, and the Wall immediately taps out.
Also, I don't think that I ever caught this before. Like, I guess it makes sense. Setting up a table is AWOL's signature?
He's been doing this for a while, yeah.
Sure, but like, he's not the only person that sets up tables. But when the commentary was like, oh, his signature move, a table. Like, is that really his signature move?
Don't you remember that best of 5-9 tables matches?
I forgot AWOL was in it.
Yeah.
I just don't associate him with like big table spots.
Yeah. Now, standing atop of a building. I know
he's
a guy.
Best. The best in the business for that.
Post-match, Steiner puts AWOL in the recliner with the lead pipe until Sid appears on the screen to beckon Steiner outside. And Scott Steiner has to jog to the back.
He books
it. We are running out of time.
We have 3 minutes left.
He goes outside in trunks in 40-degree weather.
It's December 12th. It's cold.
Steiner immediately smashes a car window, and he and Sid.
Whose car is that?
He and Sid awkwardly brawl as part of the roster cheers them on. Sid wants to powerbomb Steiner on the car, but Steiner hits a low blow with his head, and then they brawl on top of the car until we go off the air.
Sid on top of a car does really give me 22 vibes.
Yeah, this was not as fun, though.
It wasn't as fun as I wanted it to be.
And guess what? I feel like if you had spent a little time on choreographing that outside brawl, maybe you didn't need to do the AWOL match.
Yeah.
I feel like you could have just had Sid go, come out here, and then do something fun. Because there was not a single fun car spot with any of that.
No.
And, like, you need to have Sid do a cool spot, have him standing tall to be like, oh, my God, he's going to win the world title. This is just, these guys are eventually going to fight.
Yep. And, like, Doesn't this make you want to buy the pay-per-view in 2 weeks?
This is a horrific build for this main event.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah, the pay-per-view is in, what, a week? 7 days.
Well, normally it'd be 6 days, but we're on Tuesday, so it's in 5 days.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, just the issue overall is there is not a single hot angle going into Starrcade.
And it's your biggest show of the year.
Yeah, like, the fact that I'm like, the Insiders versus the Thrillers is probably the best story going into the show.
Maybe.
That's a bad sign. Yeah,
that at least has some history.
Because the three-team ladder match, which, man, they didn't get a look in at all in the show.
No, not at all.
Most you got was, hey, Sid's doing something crazy. That story's been going for so long, and since the team split, it's like weirdly cooled off rather than heated up more.
I have no reason to be excited for Starrcade. Why the fuck would I buy it?
You know, based on the number, a lot of people had that thought.
Yeah.
But Emily, thoughts on this show as a whole?
It's skippable.
I feel like this is the show you should have done last week.
Yes.
Because last week was like, what the fuck? Like, this actually put in some time on the angles.
A little bit, but it's still a filler episode.
Yeah, it did not feel like a culmination of what's going to happen. It's just like,
it does not feel like a go-home show.
More like a I-want-to-go-home show.
Hey-o.
Well, with our hopes at an all-time low for Starrcade, let's get into best bit, worst bit, and MVP. Emily, what did you come up with for your best bit?
My best bit was the Santa Claus reveal. I also just love that whole match. I loved that match. I loved, like, Norman Smiley, Terry Funk coming in. Particularly the ending point where he and Crowbar have their, like, fuck you moment. That's my best bit.
Yeah, I'm giving mine to that whole match and segment just to kind of clean it up a little bit. Yeah. Emily, what about your worst bit?
What I wrote down and what I was hoping to find something aside from, I'm going to give it to Sid with his new catchphrase. It's bad.
Mama said it be that way sometimes.
It do be bad. Mama said it do be a bad catchphrase.
As mentioned, I'm giving mine to the DQ finish of Corporal Cajun versus Shane Douglas.
Yeah.
So guys, you have to talk to your roster about what's allowed, what's not, if you're going to do that. Like, yeah, main event, fucking table spots and chair shots. It's like, no, that's fine.
Yeah.
And earlier in the show, you're like, rules are pretty lax.
Pretty lax.
Apparently not. Which is it?
Pretty lax rules.
And then finally, Emily, who is your MVP?
I think this should come as no surprise. It's Crowbar.
Okay, Crowbar.
I love Crowbar. Crowbar's my man. I love him. Anytime that he's on commentary, MVP.
I'm pulling from that segment. I'm going Terry Funk.
Yeah, valid. I could have also seen it going to Tony Schiavone just for putting up with Stevie Ray.
Special mention to Jeff Jarrett, who he's just been doing good wrestling work, and he's not cutting long promos, so he's not annoying me as much.
I think he's one of those people that can see the writing on the wall of, like, we're almost done. I need to up my portfolio. Like, maybe he's just trying to do good work on the way out so he has something to, like, show.
Yeah, for when he's capital G, double O, well, double N, double E.
He doesn't know that yet.
Fun fact, he sees that and goes, oh, Vince must be setting up some great angle for me if he's going to do that live.
Watch out.
So next up for us is Starrcade.
Are you jazzed?
Oh my God, yeah, just...
Hype!
I wish I could bottle my lack of anticipation. Because it's like, why did WWE die? This feeling of, oh my God, who the fuck
cares? Who cares?
Well, but if you want to compare and contrast the last couple Starrcades to this show, because
we've done them all, baby.
Yeah, the last two have had bad endings, so hopes are low for this one. But you want to see Emily get really pissed off at the stun gun for the first one? You can do that on our back catalog. Pretty much everywhere podcasts are found. Also follow us on social media at Butts in the Pod, and then we have our Patreon, patreon.com/buttsintheseats. We mention it each time, but we're doing the Rise of the NWO. And a couple days after this, if you want even more Starrcade content, We have Starrcade 1996 coming out over there too. So
woo,
we got
Starrcade.
So much Starrcade.
So many Starrcades.
How many stars?
Not five.
We got a good bit of content over there, and
we really do.
Yeah, everybody over there seems to be having a good time. So
yeah, we love having conversations in the comments and like hearing. There are people on our Patreon that have a little bit more context of like how the times were when this was actually airing. So I love hearing those little stories of like, well, in the 90s, like I wasn't a conscious human in the 90s. So it's fun to hear these like stories.
Yeah, it made me realize no one ever got back to me about that Ahmed Johnson chant at ECW.
Nope. No one knew.
We got Starrcade over there and Starrcade over here. Woo. And until we get to Starrcade, I'm Nick.
I'm Emily.
And thanks for listening to this special Christmas episode of the Butts in the Seats podcast.
A very happy holidays. Bye.